We are taping. So welcome to this Zen Talk in December, end of December, close to the holidays. We're happy to have you here. Todd's going to eat asparagus.
That's what I do.
While we chat with you.
That's right.
So should I just start reading this question, Todd? Should I just jump in?
Start reading.
Okay. So I'm just going to start right off the bat because we got a bunch of questions. So
okay, don't start reading,
Todd says.
I want to say hi to Peggy. And to Jennifer, and to Sean Emerson, and to Carney, and to Kristen, and to Millie, and to Liz, and
Kathy.
To Kathy, and to Allison. Hi, everybody.
And again, just as a reminder, you guys, you know you've got your chat options, so if you want to say something, and you know you can, and you, but you don't want to, we've got you muted, so you can type it in the side, or you can raise your hand, and we'll do our best to make sure we get to you. So, did you want me to read?
No, I'm the reader.
Okay, that's what I was
gonna
say.
All the answers. I have all the
questions.
That's
not true. I don't have all the answers, but I might have some suggestions. I might have some ideas.
So, as everybody knows, we'll ask you guys for questions later, but we'll start out with Eileen.
All right.
This seems like such a basic, obvious problem, but lately my kids are always fighting. Interesting.
Happens.
This wasn't always the case, and I want to know what I can do to help. I have a 7.5-year-old boy and a 3.5-year-old girl. As Lila gets older, the fighting has become more frequent and intense. Jax used to have a lot more patience with Lila, who's a 3.5-year-old, and Lila can be tough, and I think he views her more as a big kid now. So it sounds like he's starting to look at her as a kid and not a baby. They can play so nicely together, and then things escalate quickly, and they're fighting, and it ends in someone getting hurt, screaming, crying, etc. I know the kids fight, and it's normal, but I want to be doing what I can to help them work it out. I try to let them figure it out themselves when possible, and sometimes I step in and say it seems like they're having a hard time. What should we do to solve it? I also should mention I'm having a baby next month. Oh, my goodness. Good old Eileen. And I know the kids are feeling that too. So my question is, are there any tips or tricks to help them work it out together that I am missing? I want things to be more peaceful like they once were. Before you start,
okay.
I said this story on the podcast one time. I was listening. Wayne Dyer is one of our favorite teachers. And he told a story on one of his PBS specials, or maybe it was on a, I don't know where I heard it. But his technique, which I shared on the podcast, is that he used to, when his kids were fighting and going crazy, he'd walk out of the room.
Right.
So I decided I was going to be Wayne Dyer, and I'm going to start walking out of the room when my kids go nuts and start yelling at each other. And it didn't work.
Because who was then left to deal with it? Me.
But sometimes I did it when you were at home, thinking that they would just figure it out. And I don't know, I did it wrong.
Wayne Dyer also said that he said to his kids, you have no idea how much I don't care about what's happening between you two
right now. That's when he was reading the Tao.
So here's the thing. Love Wayne
and rest
in peace. And he taught us so much, but I don't think he was the primary caregiver.
No, I think it's safe to say that he was married 2 or 3 times?
A few times, yeah.
That he was busy on the road doing his thing.
Yes.
Writing books.
He was, that was the agreement. So that's not a judgment. I'm just saying that sometimes when someone gives advice and they're not the primary caregiver, sometimes it can be like, well, that works when you get to walk out of the room and leave it to someone else. So what I would say is, number one, it reminded me a teeny bit of, I think, Jennifer's question from last time, which was, I want it to be like it was before. I want the peace that we had before when they were little. I want them to be more connected like when they were little. And they're not supposed to be that way right now, because they are starting to see each other more as peers. They are starting to recognize that they have similar interests and similar needs, and that's going to cause conflict. So having a, let's just say they're almost 8, almost 4-year-old argue is not something where you have to be like, oh no, what's wrong with them necessarily. It's more about, okay, we're at a different stage, so how do we deal with this? Rather than let's get back to like it was when they were, you know, 5 and 1, it won't be that way again. And that's okay, it shouldn't be. This is an interesting stage too. And I agree with you, like what you're trying to do is help them, not just with the issue that's happening in that moment, but what is their frustration with each other overall. Because a lot of times you will find with your children that there are common themes that they fight about. It may look different. It may one day be about a ball, and then the next day it's about who can sit in the front seat or the certain seat in the car. But it's the same kind of argument, which which what we have found in our kids' lives is it's about, you're not hearing me. I don't feel like things are equitable or fair. I feel like this person gets more attention. I feel like I give to you, but you don't give to me. And that's kind of what you're trying to get down to. It's totally cool when you guys are in a hurry to just deal with something in the moment. You don't have to be totally deep every time your kids have an argument. Sometimes it just needs to be solved. Like, it's your turn, then you're 5 minutes later, you know, and that's totally fine. But when you do have the time, and I think this is the question, Eileen, because you're trying to figure out what can I do differently? It's really sitting down and saying, okay, you guys are arguing about this again, and I've just noticed that you guys are arguing and you get so angry with each other, and I know that we can find better ways. This is actually what our job is as people, is when we find constant conflict, what's a better way that we can find? And what are you really feeling? You know, when he took that from you, not just does it make you sad, which is that surfacey thing, but what does that mean to you? That he doesn't value you, that he doesn't think you're as important, that you didn't get your turn. Again, they're kids. I'm not expecting them to like give some grand, you know, soliloquy about not feeling valued, but just sometimes they'll say it's not fair. And then saying, tell me about fair. Well, he had that ball yesterday and I didn't have it. And I feel like that's happening a lot. Okay. That's something we can work with. I see what you're saying. I hear you. Because the thing is a lot of times we're trying to solve a problem, like who really gets the ball. And that's not what it's about. It's more about, do you hear me? Do you see me? Does what I have to say matter? That's really the core of it. And if we don't get to that core, they're going to keep arguing and it'll show up with the ball in the car, in their bedrooms, in the hallway, at dinner time. Do you see what I mean?
Plus, I think it's, we kind of want it to just not happen again.
Right.
We want to solve it. Mm-hmm. How do I deal with this so these two beautiful souls don't fight anymore? It's not going to happen.
And it's not about that fighting necessarily that fighting is good and that we're saying, let your kids fight. What we're saying is there's a normal, when you live under the same roof with people, there's going to be normal annoyances. And they are these people that you live with are your testing ground for the rest of the world. What that means is it's your opportunity. Siblings are a great opportunity to figure out conflict resolution. Yeah. In a very conscious way.
You practice almost every day.
Every day you get practice. So when you're like, I can't believe my kids are fighting, to Todd's point, yeah, because they're like under the same roof and they're with each other all the time and they see everything. You know, like I bet if I were, you know how we've talked about that every kid, first born, second born, third born, they all have a completely different experience in the house. That the firstborn has a different reality than the thirdborn, than the secondborn.
Every child is born into a different family.
That's right. Regardless of if they're born from the same parents in the same house.
We used to have a 3-person family when JC showed up.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden we had a 4-person family, which is completely different dynamic. And then all of a sudden Skylar showed up and we had a 5-person family.
Which is a very different dynamic because now nothing's even.
Right. Completely different.
Yeah. So, and that, you know, when people are like, but I have 3 and I can't make it even. We're like, correct.
Yeah.
that's part of having 3.
You go from man to man to zone defense.
Exactly. Leader. Sometimes we're trying to get something that's impossible to get. And rather what it more is about is first acceptance and normalizing, which is what I'm trying to do for Eileen. Like, it's normal that they're arguing. And I think you know that. I'm not trying to, you know, I think you get that. But it's also recognizing that now's a new stage. And so it's going to take a different way of managing it than what you did a year or two ago. And I really do think that if you can occasionally sit down on the floor and say, all right, there's been a lot of crying, not angrily. You got to really check your tone. All right. There has been so much arguing and disagreement between you two. And I understand, you know, it's part of growing up, but what can we do together to hear each other better? And will you resolve it all in that moment? No, but it sets a tone for how we deal with conflict, which is we pay attention, we recognize the energy we're bringing to the situation, we take responsibility for our part, and a lot of times we just want to solve it and move on. Conflict resolution is a lifetime practice.
Yeah.
And that's what you are demonstrating to them. And they start to pick up tools along the way. And as they get older, we see with our girls all the time, like even getting in the car today, I took my, my middle daughter and my younger daughter to school today. And they both tried to go for the same seat. And the younger one said, oh, sorry, I know it's your turn. I thought you were going to sit in the front. I apologize. Okay. And she doesn't always do that. Our girls still argue and fight, but that language that she used, we have been practicing for years and not even saying, say this, but it came out of her that, you know, like, I've seen other people take responsibility for their behavior. I've watched other people apologize. I recognize what I did. And then there was no argument. Doesn't always work out that way.
No, it doesn't. For instance, JC, her love language is touch and space. Cameron's is not. And you know how JC just gets into her space?
She wants to hug her all the time.
And Cameron calmly says, please stop. So, like, Cameron does everything we tell her to do. Like, be calm, ask for space, do this. And Cameron does them one bullet point at a time. And JC won't stop.
And a lot of times that's when I end up intervening, is when she'll say, I've said all the things. I've done, please. And then that's when I'll come in and I'll say, Jace, let me hug you. If you're looking for that.
Well, that's the thing. JC wants attention in that moment. Mm-hmm. Maybe she wants it from Cameron, or maybe she wants it from anybody
somebody
who will give it. Meanwhile, I'm in the kitchen with my headphones on and Kathy's out running errands. So she'll take whatever she can get.
Yeah.
The only other thing I want to say to Eileen is, and you touched upon it, is what energy are you bringing to it?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really hard to bring a calm energy to two children that are fighting.
That age.
Arguing,
yeah,
whatever.
Tough.
But that's your work. That's the hardest part about this whole thing. And it's not to solve their issue. Really, your goal is to, what energy am I going to bring to the situation when they are struggling?
And choosing, is this the time when I'm going to go deep dive with them because I have time?
Yeah.
Or is this a time when I'm going to do a on-the-surface problem solving to move on because they got to get to school or it's time for bed? Not every time is a deep dive, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Because the deep dives are sustaining, meaning when you do them occasionally, you can bring them in to even the more surfacey.
You said do-do.
I did.
We had Mimi wrote something on Facebook, and I just wonder if you wanted to paraphrase.
Oh, yeah, sure. So
talk about it.
Okay, so last week, Mimi's question was about her daughter, who she had said, you know, and again, we couldn't get her on. And so it was basically about that her daughter was bisexual. And she said to me, she wrote to me right before we started this and said, kind of told me the story a little more in depth. And basically, it's not that her daughter came to her and said, I believe I am bisexual. Mimi had read some texts that she was sending back and forth to friends because her daughter was being more secluded and she was concerned about her. And then when she approached her daughter about her sexuality and said, you know, what is this? Her daughter got pretty upset and, And again, I don't know exactly what her feelings were about it, but what, you know, kind of said, yes, this is a thing I'm going through. I'm not sure. And Mimi was awesome about saying, this is nothing to be ashamed of. We love you. We've got your back, did all the right things. But Mimi's concern is that since then, her daughter hasn't really wanted to talk about it much. She has said, Mimi asked her the next morning, how do you feel? And the daughter said, I feel calmer. I feel better. So she probably felt good that her mom now knew something important about her. And Mimi said something to the effect of, you know, right now hormones are raging and, you know, really we don't, you know, you may not know for sure. And her daughter said, but what if it isn't my hormones? What if this is just who I am? And I hope, Mimi, I'm doing a good job with that paraphrase. But so just with that update, what I would say is that, first of all, Mimi, your comment back to her was really great about, you know, reminding her to not be ashamed of who she is and that you've got her back and that what she's going through is very normal, that her experience is shared, that she's not alone, that this is something that is very typical at this age and that, you know, you're there for her. What I would say at this point is remind her, you don't need to now try and pull information out of her on a daily basis or think that that's something you need to do. What you need to remind her is that you are there for her, that if she needs to talk or wants to talk, that you are available. And I would even suggest maybe setting up a date with her after the holidays. Right now it's too busy, I'm sure. But you know, setting up a time, like say, let's go to lunch in 2 weeks, or let's go to a movie together and then go, you know, have coffee after, or let's go chat away from everybody else. And she may not still want to talk about her sexuality, but what you are demonstrating is that when we say to our kids, I'm there for you, I've got your back, that's words. We need to really show up in that way. Like, I know you're struggling right now. You may or may not want to talk about it, but I am going to demonstrate to you through my actions that I am here for you. And you can, like, when you guys are together alone, you can say, do you want to talk about, you know, your text messages, or, you know, the fact that you're thinking maybe you're bisexual. Do you want to talk about that with me? And she may say, no, not right now. And that's okay, because you have the bravery to bring it up. And she, but she, it's her information. Do you see what I mean?
It's her story to tell.
It's her story.
When she's ready.
It's not about, you must tell me so I feel better about what's going on and I feel more. That's what we do a lot of time. We do this with our little kids too, not just with our teenagers. But tell me so I can relieve my own anxiety. We're really not asking for their benefit. We're asking because we don't want to feel anxious about it anymore. So you're going to demonstrate through your actions. And you know what? We've talked a lot about on the show, if she doesn't want to go on a date, or you can't figure that out, or for whatever reason, it doesn't end up being as deep, you know, a deep a discussion as you'd like it to be, start writing her notes and saying, I'm thinking about you today, and leaving her post-its.
There's always a way.
And sending her texts, you know? Yeah. Like, you know, I think.
Get resourceful.
Right. Creative. And what you're doing is you're not doing these things to get information from her. You're doing these things to do exactly what you told her you would do, which is, I have your back. Oh, I started a note for her.
You are the best. take her to see Lady Bird.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Go see Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, I give it 3 stars out of 4. What do you give it?
I give it 3.5, almost 4 stars.
I think it's more for women than men.
But I think men should see it.
I think men should see it. But
can I tell you how many movies I've seen for men in my lifetime that I've had to elicit some kind of information? Do you know how many Marvel comic movies there are out there?
There's a lot. But it's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful movie. You won't be disappointed. But the essence of it is a relationship between a mother and a daughter.
It is. And theirs is... You know, I heard a interview with Greta Gerwig, who wrote and directed it, and she talked about how complicated the mother-daughter relationship can be, and that she didn't want people going to the movie thinking that one of them was the protagonist and one of them was the antagonist. That's not it. She wanted to demonstrate how both mother and daughter play a role in the often there's animosity sometimes, but there's also a lot of love. Not every scene in that movie is them arguing.
No, it's real life.
It's real life. And I found their acting amazing. And I thought it was a true, you know, when I say a true story, it's semi-autobiographical, Greta Gerwig said, but not 100%. She didn't have anyone call her Lady Bird when she was
By the out. Way, Mimi started a note before you even said that she started a note and she thought it was foolish. Mimi, it's not foolish.
No. The written word is so powerful. Do you know I still have a letter that Todd wrote me when he was 21 years old? I love written words.
What did I write?
You just told me about school, and you were still in school.
Sounds intense.
And then you told me, because I was becoming a teacher, I had just graduated from college, and you told me to pay attention to the kids who were doing their work and not just focus on the kids who were
slackers.
Who were slackers.
Behavioral issues.
Todd always felt like a good student, but that no
My teachers never gave
attention
me attention because I was dutiful and I sat there quietly, and I wanted to be as friendly with my teachers as the kids who engage in this kind of fun, silly relationship with their teachers.
Yeah.
And, you know, us good kids, you know, because that's what I am.
All the time.
We get left behind.
And then you told me at the end to go like the flow. Like
go with the flow like a twig on the shoulder of a mighty stream. Words from Del Griffith from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Very romantic.
One of the best movies of all time.
That was my letter from Todd.
But
I kept it because words are powerful, and it just told me that if he's writing all this, he must think of me as a really good friend or something.
And whenever you want to separate yourself from the pack, write a letter, because we all email and type stuff. If you handwrite something, it's like such a novelty. Like, oh my God. Somebody, like even like our Christmas cards, like, you know, we did the postcard where we throw a sticker on there and a stamp. And
I wrote on them, though.
Oh, did you?
Last night, yeah.
Oh, look at you. You're good.
Yeah.
There's something kind of really magical about a written letter. Now, I don't do them. This is me you know, saying one thing and doing something else, but it's pretty cool.
And writing to your kids who you see every day, or your spouse who you see all the time, that's pretty powerful to say when we are not conversing face to face, even when we live under the same roof, there are still words I want to share with you.
And think about the opportunities we have now with text. Like, my daughter is doing her first day of finals today, yeah. And I wrote her a text after basketball this morning, and I said, do the best you can. I love you. Like, I didn't even say good luck. Because I really don't care how she does on them. She's been studying hard, and if she panics and does poorly, I don't care. She prepared her best for it. So
the intention is not do well. The intention is I'm with you.
Yep.
So, and I love you. So, Mimi, it's a good idea to write that letter. And you know what? Here's the other thing about letter writing. You can write a letter and never send it. You can write a letter and never give it to someone. Letter writing is an exercise in using our voice. And sometimes writing it down is helpful about bringing it through. So you, Mimi, you may write a letter to her and read it and say, I'm not ready to give this to her. But the exercise is not wasted. I hope you give it to her, because I think she will keep it the rest of her life. There's actually a scene in Lady Bird about that, interestingly
yes.
enough. But, you know, I'm telling you, I kept a letter from Todd from 20 years ago. So
Mimi's going to give it to her daughter. Yay, Mimi.
Yeah, and you tell us what happened next time, because that's, I think you will find it to be very lovely.
That's right. I'm going to go to Jennifer real quick.
Okay. And
she's got some takes.
Awesome, Jennifer. There's another one in here. You know that, right?
Yeah, we'll go to Carney next.
Okay,
but
go
I
ahead,
asked
Jennifer.
Carney, she wanted to ask if she hasn't answered me yet. Hello.
Okay. Hi, guys. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Yes.
Happy Hanukkah.
Lovely.
Yes.
So, thank you. So, two things I wanted to say to you guys. One is to thank everybody who sent positive vibes to my son who had heart surgery, because we followed up with the doctor yesterday, and it appears that the defect has been corrected. And they'll monitor him for another year, but he'll keep his implanted loop recorder in, but they think that it's fixed. So I just want to thank everybody for all your well wishes and good thoughts and positive vibes. So thank you very much. And then the second thing is that I know that we talk a lot about kind of giving up control, and instead of trying to fix your kids' problems, if we sometimes just let them know that we're 100% supportive of them, that they'll kind of fix it on their own. So I just wanted to share with you guys, I think in one of the podcasts, Kathy, you called it a like release button. Like, if you give your kids that option for a release button, that they may not even use it, but if it's there, it provides them with some type of comfort and security, and knowing like if they need to press it, they have it to press. So my one son who's 10, he has a phobia about performing in the Christmas concert at his school. When he was young, he got sick and he fell off the risers. And ever since then, I laugh because it's not funny, but it happened in first grade, and every single year he has like an anxiety attack about this concert. So in the past, I've tried to come up with solutions, like things like, oh, well, you know, try to look in the audience and see me and know that I'm there and everything's going to be okay. So I kind of tried ways to convince him to do it. And this year I just said, you know what? It's fine. Don't do it. I was like, if you are this concerned about it, it's not that big of a deal. You know, that's fine. And he's like, oh, but what are people going to say? I said, you know what? You could stay home from school that day. Don't even bother going to school that day. So he just kept, you know, kind of obsessing about it and getting worried about it. And yesterday after school, he came home and he's like, I'm going to do the concert. I was like, awesome. And he went to school today. The concert's in like an hour. So we'll see what happens. But he didn't press the release button, but I provided it for him. And it was interesting. The other quick part of the story was that when I discussed it with my husband, there was that little part of him that was like, well, what is this going to say when he doesn't want to do something that he can bail? And I referred to you guys and I said, all right, remember what Kathy and Todd always say, that That's like our history and the stories we have in our head talking. You know, right now he needs us to support him because this is really bothering him. And he had just done a play like a month ago at the school. So it's not even like a fear of performing in front of people. It's just that this really, really bothered him. And I said, you know what? He's in fourth grade. He's 10 years old. Let's not worry that every single thing is going to set a precedent for the future. So it wasn't completely easy to do, I want to admit, but I just kept saying, you know what? Let's just support him. We believe in supporting him, and let's just go with it and trust it. And if he doesn't go, he doesn't go. No big deal. And he went. So I just wanted to share that success story because I think sometimes we focus so much on what we're doing wrong instead of sitting with our successes. So I'm trying to do that more and to also share that with other parents because, I mean, I've been a mom for 15 years, so I've been working on it for a while. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you guys.
Awesome. So Jennifer, I'm going to mute you just so the audio comes in better.
Love that story.
So I have two things. One is obviously so glad that your son is recovering from heart surgery. Just so glad. So wonderful
news. That's great news.
And I might have to unmute you because I'm going to ask you a question. When you gave him the release valve, you kind of surrendered to whatever was going to happen was going to happen. But then he came back and did what many parents would like, which is to kind of face his fears and walk through it and all that. So my question is, when that happened, when he's like, I think I'm going to do it, at least if that were to happen to me, there was at least be a part of me that would want to like celebrate it and like clap and say, I'm so glad you're doing it. But I think the Zen parent, the conscious parent response really should be kind of like a poker face if you need to, and not make a big celebratory thing. Because if you did celebrate the minute he said he's going to face his fears, then he would have known that you wanted him to do it the whole time, and you really didn't have that we're parents. We want our kids to kind of face challenges and do the school play and do all these things. So I'm going to unmute you, and I just wonder what your initial reaction was when he told you.
So when he got off the bus and he said he was going to do it, he just walked right up to me and he said, I'm going to do the concert. And I looked at him and I was like, okay, yeah. I go, I know this is a trick. So I kind of like, you know, joked around about it. And then I'm like, mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you're toying with me. And then he took off and ran in the house and I just let it go. And then a little while later, he brought it up again. And I was like, are you serious? And he's like, yes, I'm serious. I go, that's awesome. I said, if you want to tell me, you know, what made you decide that, that'd be great. And he took off again. So I was very nonchalant about it, even though I was like, oh my gosh, what happened at school today? What happened? And I still don't know. Yeah. I still don't know. Okay. So if I find out, I'll tell you. But I did.
I muted you.
Play it off.
Sorry. So Kathy, what do you agree with me that it's important that you don't react out of like celebratory when your kid has a success?
Well, I think what Jennifer did and what is always the goal for all of us is we got out of their way. Okay. So a lot of us would look at that as look what Jennifer gave to her son and look what she did, which again, I celebrate this as a parent win. I would too. I'm not saying don't. But what I'm saying is we look at it as something Jennifer did. And what she did really is she got out of his way and said to him, I'm not a part of this equation. Yeah. You don't have to do anything for me. You get to choose. So you don't have to make me the reason you're doing it. And what he ended up doing was being intrinsically motivated to choose it for himself. She was not part of the equation anymore because she said, either way, it's cool. This is not important enough for us to make a big deal. So what she did was gave him the gift of autonomy. So him choosing this to me is more powerful than Jennifer saying, let me figure out where you're going to stand and make you feel better about it. Because that would be her, like she said, her figuring it out. And not that that's necessarily bad. This is just so cool. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about here's good, here's bad, here's right, here's wrong. This is just him. It reminds me of our, and we get these kind of, people send us these stories occasionally, but the biggest one we did a show on was the Listen, Allow, Repeat show our friend Steve and his son, who was into ballet. and, or he wasn't into ballet, he started dancing, and initially he said, I'm not going to go back and dance. And his dad said, okay, you know, he had already paid for it. He was like, he's like, but you don't have to. And the next morning, just like Jennifer's son, he said, I am going to go back. And then he came home the next day and said, I'm not going back. And his dad goes, okay, you know? And then he went back, and now this kid is like a ballet star in his state.
He's a rock star.
I mean, this kid is like, you know, we should, you guys should see the pictures of him. He's done the Nutcracker every year for 3 years. He's the man.
I'm actually sending everybody the link to that podcast right now.
Listen, Allow, Repeat. It's
one of my favorite podcasts we've ever done. And all we do is read this Stephen's letter.
Yeah, it's not us.
About his experience with his son. It's so awesome.
It's Stephen, just like Jennifer's story, it's Stephen's parenting. Mm-hmm. And what his parenting was just like Jennifer's. He just got out of the way. That's all. He just didn't micromanage it and say, here's how we're going to do it. And, you know, he just got out of the way. And again, I'm always careful because I know for those of you with little kids, there are some things you still need to micromanage. It's not that everything with our kids, you know, just like the question Eileen had where my kids are fighting, I wouldn't say, oh, get out of the way, do nothing all the time. There are times that for safety or for lessons that that's important. But Jennifer's son is 10. And he has a lot of information about himself now. Mm-hmm. And he has, I would call his experience on the risers post-traumatic stress. And I don't mean he's got a disorder, but it's, you know, that's supposed to, if I fell off a riser, next year I'd be scared too.
Yeah.
And so what he's recognizing is, okay, I am afraid. Am I going to be afraid and never do this again? Or am I just going to be afraid and do it? And what Jennifer said is, either way, I got your back. So you're cool. Because he may... Let me change this story around and say, what if he would have come home and he said, I'm not going to do it. And Jennifer would have supported him and said, that's fine. He would have learned from that experience too, because he would have watched everybody else sing and not felt good about it.
Yeah.
And he would have said, next time I may not make that choice. See, we assume as parents, if we let them off the hook, then that's going to be the person they become. We learn from our choices that maybe are more fear-ridden as much as we do from our brave choices. So, and because we have someone supporting us along the way. So bravo to
nice
Jennifer.
Job, Jennifer.
I love that story.
So Carney is somebody who wrote this kind of long question. There she is right there. Carney, are you willing to share basically what you shared with us on Facebook?
You can just sure. Unless it would be easier for you guys to just read my question, that's fine too. I did just want to say one thing to Jennifer. I apologize. I actually just finished listening to the Compassion and Civility podcast, and I was thinking about your son, and I'm glad to hear of the good update. The other thing I want to say, Jennifer, is my family is a lot like your in-laws. My family is loud, and my husband is very quiet. We've been married 17 years. And the one thing I can say is that, and you described, you know, your in-laws to my family to a T. I can just say this. My husband, he is kind of quiet. He is coming out of his shell more. And because my family talks so much and everybody needs to be heard and has to have the spotlight and everybody's talking over each other, when my husband does talk, they actually stop and listen. So, you know, and they respect everything he says because he says so little. So I hope that helps you.
For sure. Thank you.
That's lovely. So, Carney, this is about your, oh, I remember this. I read this morning.
Sorry, it was so long.
Want to paraphrase? No, don't apologize. I kind of feel like coming from you, it's better than me. So just do your best.
Okay, so my son, I almost feel like I think I'd rather read it, or if you guys want to read it, because I feel like I'll just ramble on and on. I feel like when I wrote that, I proofread it. I made it concise. So sure. I think reading it might be better. And if you have it right in front of you, maybe that would be better.
Well, sure. I'll do it.
All right.
Do you mind if I read this time?
I'm usually the reader.
Okay, go ahead, Todd.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Well, we've heard my voice a lot today. I've been blabbing, so go ahead.
Are you saying I don't blah blah?
Well, sometimes I'm just talking, and I want to hear your voice too. So go ahead.
She likes to talk.
I do.
Hi, team. I'm writing about my sweet, laid-back 9-year-old son.
Fourth grade.
His birthday is in April, but he's younger than most kids in his grade. Our district tends to hold kids back for one reason or another. We agonized over this decision after kindergarten and after lots of discussion with his preschool teachers, then teachers, other parents, and teachers in our family. We decided academically it wasn't necessary for him to be held back, although now I'm not so sure that we did the right thing. His first grade teacher, who has two boys of her own, said it wasn't necessary to hold him back because he was too bright. Then in second, third, and now fourth grades, at every teacher conference, we hear that he needs adult prompting to finish a task and gets distracted easily. I've worked closely with his teachers over the years, giving rewards for positive teacher feedback. In the beginning of this year, his name was constantly on the board for talking to neighbors, as he's quite social, unlike us at his age. When we talked with the teacher, we agreed that his Xbox would be taken away from his name
when his name was on the board.
When his name was on the board, and he stopped. He gets work done during the day because he figured out early on the teacher has kids bring unfinished work home as homework. He definitely focuses better when he's seated with other kids that focus. He lives, breathes, and eats sports and hopes to be a pro someday. We encourage that dream, but also emphasize the importance of school and that coaches will want grades upheld. His teacher thinks the potential is there, but the motivation isn't. This is the first year his grades seem to be affected by his lack of motivation. He does, however, read on grade level. I've avoided bribing him to just get average grades, but I don't really see him getting internal satisfaction from good grades, which is odd because he's competitive. I've wondered if he needs an evaluation for learning disabilities or possibly ADD or a talk with the school social worker. His teachers over the years didn't see a need to get evaluated. He admits he wants to play Xbox all day and that he doesn't care about school. His teacher last year said all the boys said they hate school, like a peer pressure thing, and my son does naturally care what his friends think. He has great friends, is creative, and is generally very happy, but he also can be sarcastic, impatient, and sometimes has no filter. He doesn't want to be homeschooled. I asked him half-heartedly. Doesn't want a tutor, and he gives us no trouble with doing homework, especially when it's on the computer, and even surprises us by asking us to write out a math word problem for him to solve, maybe so he can stay up later. If he needs help, I want to get it for him, but I really just don't know where to start. Thanks for any inputs.
So, Carney, that's lovely, and I feel like I can answer, but is there anything you want to add?
Well, there's things like, you know, we'll be upstairs ready for bed and he's like, I want water, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of kids want water when it's time to get into bed. And I'll say, okay, I mean, we have the filtered waters downstairs. So that's the water I want him to drink, not the unfiltered upstairs. So I'll say, okay, go downstairs. But a lot of times he'll get distracted on the way. You know, he'll see his baseball bat laying there, maybe, you know, pick it up. And so I'll say, okay, but in 25 seconds, I want you to come back upstairs to bed. And then he'll do it. If he's got that like limit on him or that challenge, he'll do it. Otherwise, you know, maybe he'll go downstairs and drink water and come back upstairs, but probably not. So it's things like that. I guess something like that I wanted to add.
All right.
Thank you. I'm going to mute you and we're going to let Kathy go.
So a few things, and I hope this is a good thing to hear. I see more in this letter of him being really healthy and smart and making great choices and being a really normal kid than anything else. I see, and again, I know I'm not seeing him and I usually don't, you know, as a therapist, I don't like to, you know, say they have this diagnosis or they don't without seeing a kid, but I see nothing of ADHD in here. ADHD is very, it's a significant diagnosis. You would see it in many, many aspects of their life. Kids are very, it's very normal for a kid anywhere from 1 year old to 25 to on their way to doing something, get distracted and do something else. You want to know who does that? I will be going up the stairs to do something and then do something completely different and then forget even why, but that's because I'm getting old. That's a whole different thing. But I see so much health in what you wrote here. Now, the thing that I think is probably happening is school is not as interesting to him right now. And I do not think you made a mistake putting him in the class that he is in. The reason I don't think you made a mistake is because it's already done and he's been doing just fine. I don't think him being held back would have somehow increased his motivation. I think that that's completely different than being able to keep up with schoolwork or not getting along with peers. Like I can think of some kids right now where there was really good reason to possibly hold them back, and they were told by a lot of people it might be a good reason and they didn't. And then they do experience some social maturity issues, but it's not always, it's not necessarily around how motivated they are to do things in the classroom. It's more around emotional and social maturity. So I hope all that sounds good. Like, okay, yeah, Todd's like underlining all these positive things. And I think that the fact that he's demonstrating to you, here's the way, give me a math problem, give me something to stimulate my brain. He doesn't say it like that necessarily, but he's demonstrating to you, I really do like to do work when it's interesting. What happens in fourth grade, and this is pretty typical in, even in, you know, no matter what school you're in, no matter what state you're in, is responsibility becomes pushed. They focus a lot more on do your own work, figure out your project on your own. Peggy, are you still here? My aunt's a principal and she probably knows this better than I do. But fourth grade is often a big turning point in sometimes third grade too, where they start to ask you, is that true, Peggy? Is fourth grade kind of different? I'm unmuting you. Yes. Yeah. So fourth grade, what is the expectation in fourth grade usually? What are they looking for typically?
I would say they're looking for responsibility, making sure you do things, that you're nice to others. But I read the, what you read earlier today, and I got a total handle on it. I feel like he's pretty normal.
Yeah.
And not that he might have one subject that's stronger for him than another at some point in time, but I think it's being handled beautifully.
Me too.
And I often wish I could go back and do the career over again, because I'd make a lot of changes in me.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. Especially after listening to you guys so much.
Thanks, Pog.
Thank you, Peggy.
So I'm going to, I just muted Pog. So this is from what you wrote down. He needs help finishing a task. He gets distracted easily. He responds when his Xbox gets taken away. I want to ask you about that.
Uh-huh.
He breathes sports. He's not motivated by school. He reads on grade level. He doesn't care about school. He has great friends. He's creative, generally very happy. I don't know, man. And I don't mean to minimize this, Carney, but everything seems pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the issues, like, for example, because what I have a feeling is happening is the teachers are telling you these things, yes? So she's as a parent saying, okay, the teachers are giving me this feedback. Yeah, great, my kid's healthy, but what do I do? And my comment to them, instead of thinking something's wrong with my child, we need to diagnose it, label it, and fix it, say to the teacher, I'll start with the teachers, say to the teachers, I will absolutely work with you on this. I will continue to talk with them, and you have my phone number, you have my email, I will support you, we'll work as a team. So they feel like you are, you know, of course you are, but that you're invested and you're with them, because the teachers have so many students that they're just trying to make sure you know the positive, but also the challenges they're having. Like, I'm speaking as a teacher myself, you know, a lot of times we want to just say to a parent, here's all the great things, but there's always a few things that are challenging with each kid, you know, and here's the thing we can focus on. With your son, the language, and not everybody loves this, so don't use this if you don't love it, but the language we've used with our kids is school is a game, and play it, if you play it well, then there's less challenges. Meaning, school is about showing up. You got to be on time. You got to show up. School is about doing your homework, which your son is already doing. School is about, during class when the teacher's talking, I know you want to talk with your friends. I want to talk with my friends all the time too, but then you're going to lose points in this game. You know, that's going to make the teacher more focused on your behavior. So I understand why you want to talk with your friends. I would too, but can you see how this affects other parts of school then? So you're not saying to him, why would you talk? Or I can't believe you would talk. You're saying, I get why you talk in class, but in the game of school, we have to follow the rules. You know, and he knows sports. So this is going to be his language, you know, talk to him in his language. And then at the parts of the game that he's playing really well, you know, like we, you know, are, that's one thing we've been very thankful. All three of my girls have their own issues and different strengths and weaknesses, but they know the game. You know, they know, because we've been, it's not about you know, there's been things in school, like they've had teachers who haven't been very kind to them at certain times, or things that have been unfair, but they know that that's just part of it. And that when it's over the top or something that where they're being harmed, of course we will step in there and correct it. But you're not always with, like, you know, one of our daughters just had a project, and she was with three people that she was doing the project with, and they weren't doing their part, you know, which is interesting. That's another question. And it drove her crazy. And so we had to help her and support her and motivate her to do different things. But I guess, I don't know, I'm going on a tangent.
So I think, first of all, Carney, the fact that you have the initiative to
even look into
ask these questions and think so introspectively, I just want to honor that and bless that. And Carney actually just wrote this. She said, his kindergarten teacher, that was 4 years ago, thought he should be held back. She said, he's the most capable kid at the table, but he'll be the last one done. I think the only advice I have for you is just to stay. I know it's kind of vanilla advice, but just be here now. He's in fourth grade. He has some challenges in the classroom, but it doesn't mean that's what he's going to be like when he's in seventh grade. And, you know, what happened in kindergarten, I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe just taking a little step back from this, because it sure seems like this is a pretty awesome kid and he's doing a lot of really good things. And by the way, I have a hard time spending 7 hours in a classroom all day, and you know, it's just, he's not very normal.
And the widened perspective of a lot of times, and again, I'm a teacher too, so I understand why they're doing this, because they have to, kids have to reach benchmarks. But why is it a problem that he's the last one?
Yeah, big whoop.
Because that, and again, from a teacher's perspective, it's like, I'm noticing this, he's always last. But let's look at the big picture of life. Is being the first one done going to make him more successful or happy? Is the person who's the fastest? Todd and I read books together. I scan when I read. I'm like a...
You're a cheater.
No, I'm not.
You don't read all the words. You got to read all the words.
No, see, and this is the difference.
All the words.
When I read, I pick up on, what's that called? Speed reading. You know, like I read through very fast.
I do slow reading.
My dad taught me how to do that.
My dad taught me how to slow read.
He reads so slow. I'll finish a book and he's like on chapter two.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with intelligence. Do you see what I mean? And so it's like, even the teachers who are so well-meaning and we honor them for doing what they're doing, we take that input and we say, thank you for letting me know. But then we've got to figure out, is that a problem that needs to be solved? Or do I support my son in his process? Because like Todd said, in a year or two, he could be in the middle or he could be first. And I don't necessarily think that finishing, I'm not getting anything from my gut like, ooh, this is an issue.
I want to unmute Carney one more time just to see if you have any other thoughts.
Yeah, I think it was just scary for me to go against the professional opinion of the teacher back in kindergarten. You know, I mean, and we have teachers in the family, but still, you know, that always will, you know, would make me second guess the decision that we made. And the thing I want to say is, you know, we don't push for all A's. I was pushed, you know, as a kid to, you know, get good grades. But, you know, the thing is in the beginning of the school year, he was getting more, like our school grades on a 1-2-3-4 system, where 2 is you're progressing, 3 is your grade level, and 4 is exceeding. And he got more 3s, and he seems to have dropped to more 2s. But his name was also getting written on the board a lot for talking too much. So, now that his name isn't on the board as much, it's not necessarily translating that quickly into better grades, but you know, I'm hoping in time it will. And the other thing I want to say is, you know, like the math problems, the multi-step word problems. He loves math, but those multi-step problems he does have a little trouble with. And I just worry that it's a focus thing. Like, okay, if he's the most capable kid at the table, I don't care that he's the last one done. But if he's capable, then is there something going on in his mind that's keeping him from finishing at a rate he should be finishing at? And I hate to say should be, but or if he's you know, doing these math word problems and he really needs that assistance. You know, does that mean there's a focus thing going on in his brain that, you know, that we need to address, or is it okay? And if he needs adult prompting now, which he's needed for the last few years, you know, in fourth grade, maybe they're happy to give him that adult prompting, but will they continue in the older grades with adult prompting if he still needs it. I guess that's a concern for me too.
Yes. Great. Liz has something to say, and I think it's about this. Go ahead, Liz.
Hey, everyone. I just kind of wanted to talk to Carney a little bit because I have a 15 and 17-year-old, and I have the opposite experience in that they are the youngest in their class and they weren't held back. And in kindergarten, there was only my thought of, oh, they're so young, I should hold them back. And we didn't end up holding them back. And now I have a senior and a sophomore and they're doing great. And I know that's not going to help you right at this moment, but I think that there's, you know, throughout the years, there's always been that back in my head, oh, should I have kept them back because they're struggling with this right now or they're struggling with that. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, it's like, I just try to put that, put that in the back of my mind because like Kathy said, it's already done. And I think that there's also a ton to maturity. And I think that, you know, as he gets older and he needs that adult prompting, and you're right, in seventh grade, what if he still does? It's true, he could. But just try to be, I would just say, you know, I totally understand your fear from that kindergarten and going against that teacher. I completely hear you. I feel the same way still, and I just try to keep it in a place where it doesn't take over my brain, because it can take over my brain at least. And just know that, you know, maturity, it's amazing what happens between fourth and fifth and sixth, and that time where they just have to grow and be. And I just hope for you, you know, and him, that you find that the maturity really goes a long way too, because it all, you know, it clicks sometimes all of a sudden. So I don't know if that's really helpful, but it's just something that I've had to keep in my head all the time too, of like maturity is going to happen, things could change, you know, and just support him as best you can right at this moment, you know, so I don't know.
Very helpful.
Thanks.
That's so good, Liz. And I, you know, for both of you, I would say that I think sometimes when we talk about stories in our head, the story in our head is if I would have held him back, then he wouldn't be having problems with motivation. And that's not necessarily true because maturity clicks in at different years, like Liz said. So the assumption is if I would only done this, these issues wouldn't be present. And that's not necessarily true. Those issues could be present no matter what. And so it's kind of like questioning, you know, it's doing some of the Byron Katie work. Is this true? Did I really make a mistake? And could I ever really, you know, should I make that the decision that I made a mistake? And it sounds like Liz has really worked through that, and Carney, you're working through that, and it's great.
So Carney, you just shared something with me privately. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I think it's an important component to it. Do you mind if I share that with the group? You said no. Oh, yeah, she said
yeah. She said yeah.
So she said, we also have my older daughter who is a very good student and takes school seriously. She's a tough act to follow.
Yeah, and
I think that's
hard.
A pretty significant component, both for you guys as parents, because our brain is hardwired to compare and divide and all that other stuff. And
to assume that because it was this way here, it'll be this way.
Exactly. And then your son also is completely aware of the energy of the house, the energy of, you know, how good of a student she is. Like that was, I always got the best grades between my brother and my sister and I, and I couldn't stand it because I was actually discriminated against because I got good grades. It was weird.
By whom?
My siblings. Like, right. Oh, Todd, isn't Todd the best? Doesn't Todd get all the good grades? And my brother and sister, I mean, they loved me and they always did, but it was resentful. They resented me because my parents, who did the best they could with what they had, but it wasn't fair.
They made you the, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, I think that's a pretty significant part of it.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think that this applies, you know, Carney's situation is at school, but it applies with all of our kids. And it's not so different than Jennifer's, you know, story about sometimes we just get out of their way a little bit and support them and trust that these choices have already been made. These things have already happened. So I'm going to be here right now. And again, it's also information for future years. Like, I don't think there's anything to do right now, but if you find 3 years from now that, you know, like if what Liz said about maturity, you're not finding it, or you're finding that he's getting in trouble or his demeanor is changing, or he's under a lot of pressure, then you try different things. There's not, I think even when we have, you know, kids who are good students, sometimes they have tough years. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have tough teachers. Sometimes they have a tough class. Like when my oldest daughter, JC, who's now a freshman in high school in seventh grade, she had an English class. It was so hard for her. And she worked so hard and it stressed her out so much. And if it wasn't about her studentship. It wasn't about her motivation. It was about this. And
I know every year is hard, but you know, I just think of fourth grade, like the socialization with the other boys, like it's just tricky. Being a kid is hard.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I brought in my aunt, and there's probably other teachers and therapists on here too who are listening and have their own thoughts, because I think sometimes someone who see, you know, sometimes we only see our own kids, but when we see a lot of kids and when we've been an educator, we see what's normal. You know, and what's typical, and sometimes we need that wisdom. So anyway, do we have time for one more?
Well, it's 4:57. I don't know.
Okay, well, what is there one more, or were we...
There's this one.
Okay, which one? This one?
Yeah, Alexa. She said okay. She's going to listen to it later, so...
Okay, so this is... I'll write to her, but I'll just say this really quick. Okay, so it was a question, and did she write this on Facebook, I think, too? Because she said her daughter was feeling bullied because some kids were telling her that she was bossy and annoying. She was assigned a group project. I was just talking about that with a few kids, and said that she asked some of the kids to help because they weren't doing anything. And then she's thinking about emailing the teacher because she doesn't believe it's her daughter's job to make sure that all the kids are doing their own work. Basically, and she also just is upset that other kids were calling her daughter bossy and annoying, because, you know, she doesn't want her daughter to be hurt, and she doesn't know how to support, you know, she wants to make sure she's supporting her daughter appropriately. And I would say that this is a very common life experience, and it is not necessarily all a bad thing, meaning that sometimes when we're working in a group, and this is for kids or adults, we have to figure out how to navigate on that team. And a lot of times we do things like we become bossy and annoying. We all have the capacity to do this. It's not a character trait necessarily. It can be a mood. It can be just where we're feeling like we're doing all the work. And sometimes speaking up helps motivate, and sometimes it makes people annoyed at us. And we have to learn how to navigate and monitor both. And so with her daughter, I would say, you know, talking to her about it, you know, it was actually very brave of you to speak up. You know, is there, if you were to do it again, would you do it any differently? Or what did you learn from the experience? Or if someone were to say to you what you said to them, how would you feel? Not as a, how would you feel? But like a, do you feel that what you said was civil and it was respectful discourse? You know, that kind of conversation. And then you can absolutely email the teacher and say, could we work together on this? But I think sometimes we think, you know, the teacher should have intervened here, but the teacher is trying to teach the children to work in teams and to do this on their own. And she's trying not to be hugely interventional. That's purposeful. Now, that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be intervention occasionally. And if you decide to email her, you may just say, I understand that this was all about a group project, but the people that my daughter got put with, she ended up feeling overwhelmed by the amount of work. And I just want to make sure that I was able to share that with you. And it didn't sound like you were doing this, but being blaming or saying the teacher should have handled all of this. Because sometimes you don't know every aspect of what's happening, you know, interrelationally with your students. That's where we depend on, as teachers, you depend on the parents to let them know if there's something they need to know. I'll email her about this, but the word bullied, I'm always want to make sure that we're, you know, because they could have been inappropriate with her or been rude or said things that maybe she doesn't often hear, but bullying, is not always the same thing. Mm-hmm. Bullying is like a consistent, like going after somebody, trying to make somebody uncomfortable just for the sake of it, trying to make them an outcast. And in this situation, they may have been inappropriate, but was it full-on bullying or was it being immature and unkind? Mm-hmm. I just want to differentiate because it's important to do that with our words just so our kids have an understanding of the difference. Neither of them are okay, but it's important.
Plus, I think, and I'm not an expert, I'm not in the school system, but I think nowadays, this schools, teachers, parents try to avoid the word bullying, mm-hmm. because it, you know, the kids have been hearing about it so much, they just kind of tune out the minute, and they're like, oh, I know, I'm supposed to be nice to everybody. So I guess what you're saying is you just need to be cautious on how that word gets used.
I think they still use it, but they try and use it for the the true meaning of bully, because it was being used for things like, oh, you know, my kid wanted to sit down and a little girl said, oh, I'm saving this seat. My daughter's being bullied.
Yeah.
And that's just immature behavior. That's unkind behavior. And it still needs to be acknowledged. Again, is it Alexa who wrote that to me? Yeah, I don't want Alexa to think I'm saying that this is no big deal, because it still hurts. Your child still needs to hear that she's supported, but it's, you know, differentiating between the two. And if it's an ongoing thing, that's a whole nother thing. So we can talk more about that later through email.
So two last things.
Okay.
One is, some of the ladies like your hat.
Thank you. Be good to people, everybody. If you, you can go to the Be Good to People website and you can get this. They don't pay us or anything. They're not like a partner.
I wish they were our partner.
The woman who started the company, I really like her. She and I emailed a lot last year, and they're just doing a lot of good work. And my aunt, she buys a lot of stuff from them too. Don't you, Peg? She's got like a lot of cups and sweatshirts and shirts. They've got great apparel. And so I got one of these for myself, and I also have another black one. I have a sweatshirt that says Be Good to People. And when you wear this kind of stuff out into the world, man, people are nice to you. So there's a selfish motivation too.
I'm putting it in the show notes right now. Sweetie, will you tell our Zen listeners, our Zen team, the changes of what's happening with Team Zen as of January?
Okay, so very briefly, first of all, our next call is January 8th. Todd and I said this to a lot of people before we started, but we're not going to be on Facebook that much in the next 2 weeks, just because it's the holidays. And so if you write a really deep question and we don't get back to you right away, please just know we're just kind of vacationing a bit, which is important for all of us, I know. The other thing that Todd is referring to is we've been working with our web designer, Brad, and there's going to be this whole access area for you guys on our website. So you can access all these podcasts. And they'll turn up on your podcast app.
It's going to be password protected, so you're going to have to log in, and we'll send instructions, but you're going to be able to get easy access to all of the previous ones, both video and audio. One of the things that I'm most excited about is we're almost positive that you'll be able to hear our Zen Talks through your podcast app, because I consume most of my information through my podcast app on my phone, and you guys are forced to click on a link and, you know, you get distracted and then your phone kind of shuts off and you don't remember where you were, all that other stuff. So, and that will also be password protected, and we'll send all that. So, and you are going to have to end up, re-registering, because we're using a different payment site.
Yeah. And we'll walk you guys through that. It'll be easy. We're not going to make it hard for you. But like Todd said, it's actually like a whole nother podcast. It's called the Team Zen Podcast. So if there's any that you want to re-listen to, or you want to search them, or you want to listen to them again, they're all going to be accessible to you. And we're just trying to make this more
user-friendly,
helpful, obviously we're going to have more discounts on stuff we do, and we're working on it. So thanks for being with us. And we really enjoyed 2017 with you. I think we've been doing this since May. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who've been with us since day one, thank you. And for those of you who have joined us in the last couple of months, we appreciate you being here. And
some of you are going to be at the conference.
Yes.
And we look forward to visiting with you at the conference.
Yeah, we'll have some special things for you guys at the conference. Those Team Zen members, we have some things to acknowledge you, and we'll have like a little place where you guys can hang out before the conference, you know, like a little VIP room.
We're trying to make you feel special, because you are.
You are. You are special.
You are.
No, Mimi,
everybody.
It's not too late for the conference. If you want to, if you guys haven't gotten a ticket, no problem. If you enter the word Team Zen, is that right? I'll post it. I'll send it to you, Mimi, but you can still get money off. You can still get $50 off. So it's never too late. You can buy a ticket 2 days before the conference. But I think a lot of people jumped in when there was early bird, so they got a little more off.
And sweetie, how about Liz's Christmas tree? Did you finish, Liz?
Yeah, I love it.
She was
I actually undecorated it.
What?
Because I know we're going away for Christmas, and I have to take it down before we leave. My kids are so sad. So I was undecorating the tree as I was listening.
I thought you were putting
it. It's very sad. It's my favorite tree in years, and I had to undecorate it.
We're all done. It's over.
It's over.
It's over.
Look at the picture I took, but it's not. It's we're done. Love you guys.
Adios.
Thank you. Happy holidays. Keep, Merry Christmas.
Keep trucking.
Happy last day of Hanukkah. Yes.
Choo choo. Keep trucking.
Yes.
This is a train.
That's not a truck. That looks like a
choo
lizard. Choo. That looks like an animal or something.
You're an animal.
You're